Welcome to the Sermon Podcast by Church of the Nazarene. Stay tuned for the latest updates and new episodes by subscribing. Find us on Apple Podcast and Spotify. Join us live every Sunday morning at 9 on our YouTube channel. For in-person worship, join our English services at our Harrisonburg and Elkton campus at 9 and 10:30. Or our Spanish service at our Harrisonburg location at 11:45. Explore Celebrate Recovery every Monday night at 6 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in.
When you sing, you are using your body as a musical instrument. And when you sing words which are about God and the world and God's rescue of us and God's grace and mercy and love, you are actually turning your body into a kind of a resonating echo chamber of all that meaning. And you're praying that your life, and not just your mind, not just your emotions, but your whole self will actually be transformed. I mean, we humans are very strange creatures, extraordinarily complicated, as the psalm says in Psalm 139. But when we do anything, when we form any kind of a habit, we are actually changing the very brain structure, the very the memory that's in our bones and our flesh of who we have been, who we are to be, etc. My proposal is that just as God will one day raise all his people from the dead into to inhabit the new world that he's going to make, so the singing of the Psalms can be the means of anticipating that, of sharing a little bit in that remaking of reality, which is the reality of our own bodies, minds, hearts, lives. Regular praying and especially the singing of the Psalms enables us to stand at the intersection between God's time and ours, God's space and ours, and God's purpose for his whole creation and where we are at the moment.
Good morning. I'm Kevin, and we're glad that you're here today. If you're new or visiting with us, we're really glad that you're here. If you're not visiting and you've been here a long time, we're glad that you're here. Today we start a new series, and it is Worship, as you can see behind me, Beyond the Song. That's N.T. Wright who was just talking, if you were wondering who is that voice. And some would say, that guy could just read the phone book and we'd be moved by that, you know, his voice and that accent he has. It was 1997. And I was living in Pennsylvania, and I went with a group of men from my church. We actually got on a charter bus, and we went down to Washington, D.C., to RFK Stadium. I shared this once before about going on this event, but not this point. It was the first time that I went to what was called Promise Keepers. Promise Keepers was a men's gathering. It was started by a football coach from Colorado, and he wanted men to be able to be more present in their home, to be better fathers, to be better husbands. So he started having these gatherings all across the country. It was my first introduction to going. I was still pretty young, younger than I am now, even though right now you're looking at me going, "Ma, you look good, man. You're young." I'm just seeing if y'all are listening. So I went to this, and it was my first introduction, even though I had been in church before, I had been in camp meetings before, I had been in lots of different churches, in lots of different settings, but there was 50,000 men who gathered in one stadium from every race, from every age, basically from all across the East Coast and the Mid-Atlantic region, and I walked away from that. Like, I was 10 minutes in, just mouth wide open, because it was my first experience, are you listening, with uninhibited, no excuses, nothing else going on, worship. I just couldn't believe what I was watching, what I was hearing, what I was experiencing, and we're starting a series which says worship is beyond the song. But in that moment, I left that weekend thinking, this is a glimpse of what heaven, Revelation chapter 4, is actually going to be like. Some people get upset, and they probably have said it to Jeanette, even though she's not told me who it is. Why do we sing songs that repeat themselves over and over and over again? And it's because in Revelation chapter 4, there's going to be one song, and it's going to repeat itself over and over and over and over again. And you know what it says in Revelation chapter 4? And this is hard for us if we're stoic people. You will bow your knee. Because it says the elders, 24 of them, bow, and they sing in adoration and praise continually. And oh, by the way, so do angels. And it troubles me as Christian people when we think, I'm not bowing. I'm not doing that. And when we get a glimpse of what is actually taking place in the throne room, and we're invited to that, that ought to put in perspective where we're headed. Now, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, so don't get upset with me before we even start. Here's what we're doing today. We're going to look at worship. Now, I want to just start by, and I don't usually do it this way, defining what it's not. Worship is not confined to a Sunday morning experience. We're all gathered here, and we call this a worship experience. It's more than music. It's praying. It's singing. It's communion. It's all these other things we do. It's fellowship. All these things are worship. So it's not just confined to a Sunday morning experience. It's not just singing. Singing is a form or an act of worship or a result of your worship. It's not about you. Worship is about God. And worship is, are you listening? When we show up, we offer ourselves and our hands and our voice and our bodies and we say, what did God get out of this? And I wonder today, when we leave here, if you would ask yourself this question, what did God get out of me being at church today? That's a tough one, right? Worship is not compartmentalized. It's a lifestyle. Men are great at compartmentalizing. Worship is not meant to be in one little box, in one little section, in one part of your life. It's not closed-fisted. It's open-handed. It's not confined to certain spaces. It was in the Old Testament. It's not anymore. Worship is not just what you do. It's who you are. Here's a definition I'm going to use, and I'll come back to this a few times. It'll be on the screen behind me. Expressing our love and gratitude to God for who He is, for what He is, what He's done, what He said, and what He's promised to do. Let me read that to you again. I know you can read, but I'm going to read it again. Expressing our love and our gratitude to God for who He is, what He's done, what He said, and what He's promised to do. Now, I don't usually do this normally either. So if you're new here today, this is special for you. It's all for free. I'm going to give you four words. I don't normally do this. I basically try to just drive home one point week after week when I speak, but I'm going to give you four words. The first word is consecration, and here it is. It's wrapped up in these words. This is the Message paraphrase. You won't see this on the screen behind me, but I want you to listen to these words. Romans chapter 12. It says this. Here's what I want you to do, employee, father, mother, grandparent, whatever your lot in life. Here's what I want you to do. God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping. I love that he puts that first. Even your sleeping. Your sleeping, your eating, your going to work, walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing that you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit in without even thinking about it. Instead, fix your attention to God. You'll be changed from the inside out, readily recognize what he wants from you, and quickly respond to it. Those are great words. I want you to think about this as I get into some other scriptures. Do you know that Jesus, at the beginning of his ministry, is baptized, and the next thing that happens is what? He's led by the Spirit into the wilderness, and he stays for 40 days, which we're getting ready to start a mirror image of that this Wednesday. It's called Lent. That's our mirror of the 40-day testing that Jesus went through.
And so Jesus is led by the Spirit. The enemy, Satan, shows up and he tempts him in three areas. Jesus is starving, so he goes after him physically. Then he tempts Jesus in his divinity. Are you really the Son of God? And then ultimately he asks him this question. And he says to him, why don't you, Jesus, bow down and worship me? That's at the very beginning of his ministry. And we've been trying to figure out ever since who it is that we're worshiping. He made it clear in that moment who he was going to worship. Now, I'm going to use two stories today. They're not parables. Parables are made-up stories that Jesus used to drive points home. These are two actual stories. They're not made up. Both of them are familiar. Here's the first one on the screen behind me. Matthew chapter 14. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone. And the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, and he was walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost. Phantasma would be the word for those of you who've been to Disney. They said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately says to them, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Jesus in this moment, there's a lot here, is revealing his divinity. He's walking on water. He's also revealing and expressing his divinity. He's telling them when he says, it is I, it goes all the way back to when God revealed himself to Moses and he said, who should I say will send me? He said, you just tell him, I am. And Jesus shows up in this moment and he says essentially the same thing to these men. I am. Who are you, Jesus? I'm God. And I've showed up in this moment. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. And then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And he, beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and he caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? And when he climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him. And they said, truly, you are the Son of God. The first word I gave you is consecration. Are you listening? This is adoration. This is the first record in Scripture where we have that the disciples worship Jesus. And they go from complete terror to, wow, this is God. This is a powerful moment. Not just because of the miraculous thing that happened. I mean, it was so miraculous that a human being walked on water. Peter just gets right out for a little bit. And he walks on water. This is a sketch picture behind me from a famous artist, Rembrandt. Rembrandt would often sketch things before he would actually paint them. So before he painted, he does have a painting of another storm, Jesus in the storm, God on their boat, you know, and he was asleep. He has a painting of that. But this one he sketched before he did the painting. And I want you to look at this sketch. There's something odd in the sketch. You see Jesus reaching down to help Peter. But what's odd to you about this sketch? It stuck out to me immediately. There's another individual that's attempting to get out of the boat. Rembrandt, it is said. Now, Scripture can't support this. This was Rembrandt, very creative person, right? His process, his thought process was, this was such an amazing moment. This was so powerful that there would have been others in the boat who would have just said, if Peter can do it, and he's calling us, we're going. And in Rembrandt's mind, somebody else or others would have climbed right out of the boat. And they wouldn't have waited for Jesus to get on the boat. Are you listening? They were already worshiping. What was their focus? Jesus. See, when he's your focus, your worship changes. It's not just, well, do I like that song? When are we going to do another hymn? When we show up, and we're not against hymns, we're not against contemporary music, when we show up and our focus is, even in a storm, our hearts and our minds respond in worship. Why? For what he can do? No, for who he is. Next picture. This is a picture of a famous paraplegic on her wedding day. Her name is Johnny Erickson Tada. Johnny Erickson Tada was swimming at a young age in the Chesapeake Bay. She went to dive into the Chesapeake Bay one more time, like many of us would have done as kids in the water. And she hits her head, and in an instant, her life changes, and she becomes a paralyzed individual. She tells the story of her wedding day. This is a picture from her wedding day. And she said, this is her husband, Ken. She's getting ready on her wedding day like every female has dreamed about. They've dreamed about this day. It's changed for her because she's now in a wheelchair, but it's still her wedding day. She's still excited. She still wants all to go well and everything to be perfect and everything to be right. And she said, the doors are closed and she's at the back. And she said, I'm in my wheelchair and I got grease on my wheels and they run over my dress. And part of my dress ripped, and part of it now has grease on the back of my gown, and my flowers fell apart, and I'm all flustered. And she said, they're getting ready to open the door to start the ceremony. And she said, I am a mess. Until the doors open. And she said, and I got a gaze of my husband. And she said, and once I took one look at Ken down the center aisle in a packed room, nothing else mattered. It didn't matter that my flowers weren't right. It didn't matter that I had grease marks. It didn't matter that I was sitting in a wheelchair. The only thing that mattered was my gaze locked in on him. What about us? What are you battling? What are you fighting that is trying to steal your attention from locking your gaze on him? That would, for even a moment, distract you to take you away from what real, true worship of who he is waiting for you. I want to convince you in just the next few moments that you are hardwired for worship. You say, well, that's not really my personality, but I don't really know where this picture is from, but I've looked at literally hundreds of pictures, and I didn't show it because I didn't want to tick everybody off here today, but I vividly remember this past summer into the fall of the political rallies, and I took pictures of the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention of what those floors looked like as the speakers spoke. This is not from that. So everybody can exhale. I'm not making this about politics. I'm just saying they looked identical. They looked identical in that we had people who were standing on the floors with their hands lifted high, and they're thinking, this person is the answer to save us, to help us. And my heart's going, would these same folks do this in a church? Would these same folks show up, not at a political rally, at a Jesus rally, and say, with my hands lifted high, this is the individual who is going to right the ship and save us? You're hardwired for worship. Look at this picture of Coco Gauff. She's a famous tennis player. This was after she had won a famous match. Now, obviously, if you're an athlete and you win a big match, you're excited. But what I want you to focus on just for about 30 seconds is not Coco. She's in the foreground. She's just won a big match. But I want you to see what's going on behind her. See? Look at the stands. And you tell me if when a few people don't get lit and get excited and the Spirit moves them. Now, this is not a spiritual moment, I know. But look what happens. It's an invitation for a bunch of people to join with her. It's incredible. Over a tennis match. Now, I couldn't let this go. I'm sorry. I only have a couple more examples. But I haven't said anything about this for a few weeks. There was a football game a few weeks ago. Y'all remember that? It's called Super Bowl. I'll let you catch up. Okay. I haven't said anything about it. In fact, I got a few text messages. And they said, oh, wow, we're going to have to hear about this next Sunday. Nope, I'm going to wait 3 weeks. This is a week and a half ago in Philadelphia on a Friday. 1.5 million people showed up. Not to see a game. 1.5 million people show up for what? To get a glimpse of some of the players. And you think we're not hardwired for worship in America? We are hardwired. It is built in us to worship. And we'll do it in a lot of places, in a lot of ways. We'll have 1.5 million people show up. I know that probably 500,000 of them did it to drink. I know that. I mean, I'm not stupid. But I mean, 1.5 million? And many of them didn't even see anything. Is that crazy? Do you see me in there? I did not go, just so you're wondering. I wanted to go, but I didn't. It was killing me not to go. Now, last example. I'm prolonging this for a reason. You say, come on, man, get off of this. The individual on the left is Michael Jackson. When I was a kid growing up, I don't know if anybody on the planet was worshipped more than Michael Jackson. Now, the individual on the right is Taylor Swift. Right now, I'm not sure anybody on the planet is worshipped more than Taylor Swift. And I dare not say anything bad about her because some of y'all will try to fight me. One of these individuals is dead. That's Michael, or so we think. I didn't even want to put Elvis up here because we too much confusion for people. But I want you just to watch. This is not scriptural, but it's proving a point, just so you get it. Stay with me. I want you just to watch a 1 minute clip of the Jackson 5. I don't want you to watch the Jackson 5. I want you to watch the folks in the crowd and ask yourselves, are we hardwired for worship? Watch this. Hardwired for worship. Consecration, adoration, worship requires participation. We get to participate in this. And we're good participating in a lot of other venues and environments and arenas. We just struggle sometimes at church. And I'm not trying to define for you, if you're quiet, that you have to get loud. Although I am going to invite you to do that in the end. Listen to this quote. Many spirit-filled authors have exhausted the thesaurus in order to describe God with the glory he deserves. His perfect holiness, by definition, assures us that our words can't contain. Isn't it a comfort? This is beautiful. Isn't it a comfort to worship a God that we cannot exaggerate? That's powerful. We cannot exaggerate the magnificence of who it is that we show up to worship. One more story, Luke chapter 17. This is also a true story, not a parable. And here's what's happening. Now on his way to Jerusalem, this is Jesus. He's nearing the end of his ministry. Jesus travels along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into the village, 10 men who had leprosy met him, and they stood at a distance, and they called out in a loud voice. They had to do this by Jewish law. They had to yell it. In fact, one of them probably had on a bell if they were in a group to signify to everybody else, hey, unclean, unclean, so that everybody would stay clear of them. And they yelled to Jesus, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and he thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Luke, the writer of this, loves to talk about outsiders, the marginalized, and women. And he puts this in here, I believe, for you and I, on purpose. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not 10 people cleansed? Where are the other 9? Which indicates to me, 1 out of 10 was a Samaritan, the other 9 must have been Jews. Has no one returned to praise God except this foreigner? And then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. We have 2 stories. Jesus performs a miracle on the water. He walks on it. He calls Peter out. And the disciples, in just complete adoration, they worship him. Later, Jesus shows up. He's walking down a road. There's 10 guys. And he tells them, just go show yourselves to the priest. 10 are healed, and 1 comes back. What in the world? How does 12 just fall on their face? The word is proskuneo in the first story. They just fall and bow and worship him. And in this case, 10 are healed from leprosy, and 1. 1 individual out of 10 comes back and falls at Jesus' feet to thank him. And it's, oh my goodness, the half-breed Samaritan. I think 12 were just so caught up, not just in what Jesus could do for them, but who he was. And the other 10, or 9 out of 10, they just wanted something from Jesus. And they did obey, and they're healed. How do 9 out of 10 not give God the glory he deserves? The definition of worship is worth-ship. And he is worthy of it. And only 1 comes back. Huh. There are Hebrew terms for worship. When I was talking to Jeanette about today, she told me that she'd already gone over this before, but I'm just going to give it to you as a reminder. Here's the 5 Hebrew words. Shaka, it means to bow down. This is every time an angel appeared in Scripture, this would happen. Barak, it means to bend at the waist. A special authority is given. Toda or yada, it's a thanksgiving or a thank offering. Zamar, it means to make music in praise of God. This is what David did. And what David described when he said, and he talked about all these different instruments, the lyre that he would have played, making praise and music to God. Here's my favorite. Halal. Listen to the definition of this. Are you still with me? We're almost done. It's to give foolish glory. To give foolish glory. To shine and to celebrate. The Hebrews, they believed in worship so much, they just couldn't define it with 1 word. I'm not sure we can either. And we're not going to be able to define it in just 1 month trying to describe this. Here's what we're going to do today as we close. Stand with me. I'm going to invite you. We have them all around the room. There's 4 tables. There's 2 up front. There's 2 in the back. To participate in worship in a couple different ways. There's a word that's used here in this last story. The gentleman who comes back to Jesus, the 1 out of 10, and he falls at Jesus' feet, the word for praise here is Eucharist. It's to give thanks. And so that's how we're going to close today. We're going to give thanks. It's an invitation. We're going to give thanks to God for his broken body, and we're going to give him thanks for his shed blood. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to sing. I want you to come. You don't need to be a member of this church. You don't have to have taken a certain class. You just have to say, look, I'm in right relationship with God. I've turned from sin, and I want him more than anything in my life. If that's you today, you should participate. You don't have to do anything special. The table is open for all. But I want you just to come. I want you to take the bread. I want you to take the cup. And then I want you just to hold on to it. And I'm going to lead us all together. There's a beauty when we do it together, corporately, today, in this communion piece. It's an offer. And we get to offer ourselves back in this, too. So we're going to start singing in worship. In the middle of this song, we'll pause. I'll have you can sit back down after you get it. And we'll take communion together. And then we'll close out in some worship. Okay? Come. Receive communion. There's two tables up front. There's two in the back.
Thank you for tuning in today. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and stay updated on our latest episodes. If you have any questions about our church or ministry, feel free to reach out to us via email at info@cotnaz.org.